Chapter 3. Possessed. I'm not sure we're going to make it in time. Narrow two-lane country roads aren't the safest of places. I push it up a little over the speed limit, but there's no sense in risking my family's lives just to see a movie. I hate being rushed. Sometimes I think I need to plan my time better, but then I hadn't expected to be distracted earlier. Sure enough, when we arrive at the mall, we are too late for the 5 o'clock show. Jennifer and Shannon aren't too disappointed, though, because there's always shopping to be had. The three of us venture out to check out the mall. The girls gravitate toward the clothing stores, and I find myself in search of a sporting goods shop. Fortunately, the mall isn't busy for a Saturday. Lately, when I'm in crowds, I get edgy. It's not as bad as the reaction I get on a jetliner, but I feel vulnerable to panic attacks. I'm not sure what it is, but I start to feel anxious and trapped. This is a fairly new problem for me, so I haven't had a chance to discuss it with anyone yet. I seem to be battling some nagging anxiety in my life that is compounded by crowded situations. Walking back toward our meeting place, I'm not surprised to see that Jennifer has bought new school clothes for Shannon, and both of them beam satisfied smiles at me as they approach. With a good appetite worked up, we decide to get dinner at a Mexican restaurant. As we sit down and check the menu, Shannon turns to her mom. I bet Dad will get the usual again. The thing about American-style Mexican food is that it's made up of mostly the same stuff, just packaged differently. Wrap it in a tortilla, and it's a burrito. Place it in a U-shape, and it's a taco. Place it on its side, and it's a quesadilla. As the girls know, I like to order the chimichanga, not for the taste, but just because it's fun to say. I love spending time with my family. Shannon's a senior in high school and will soon be off at college. She's a very bright kid, and as an only child, she acts quite mature for her age. I don't know what happened to the time. It seems cliché, but it feels like it was just yesterday she was Daddy's little girl learning to ride a bike. The three of us talk over the options for Shannon's college education over pre-meal chips and salsa. I'm surprised to find I'm lobbying for her to attend a college within driving distance of home. Am I being selfish because I never want to set foot on an airplane again? The thought of having to fly to visit my daughter is almost enough to ruin my appetite. After discussing a variety of issues, I bring up the reason why I was late this afternoon. I describe the strange little airplanes and the two characters I met earlier. As the girls listen to my account, I can tell they sense my excitement and intrigue. I'm astonished that machines exist that allow people to roam as they please, not held captive by ordinary boundaries like fences or gravity. Anyone can be free as a bird if they want. With her eyes wide, sweet Shannon says, "Dad, that sounds so cool. They were just flying around the cornfields by our house. How come I've never seen them? Do you think they're safe? Are you going to learn to fly?" Smiling, Jennifer asks, "Mark, haven't you always had an interest in flying? I remember you and your dad always talking about planes, but I had the feeling lately you weren't so keen on airline travel. Doesn't flying bother you?" I'm somewhat surprised by Jennifer's question. I've never mentioned my fears to her, and once again I think how unfair it is that women have an intuition that allows them to see right through you like Superman's X-ray vision. Sometimes it's hard to get a word in with these two girls, and before I can respond, Shannon speaks up again. "Dad, I didn't know you hated flying. You know, my friend Cindy's mom hates flying, too. She even gets sick at the thought of getting on an airliner. Cindy says her mom is really embarrassed by it, too." Finally, a break in the conversation allows me to jump in. "You know, I have to admit that lately flying has really bothered me. I had a real hard time on that trip to my class reunion." Jennifer lays her hand over mine and replies, "Honey, a lot of people have trouble with flying. When I fly, I just grin and bear it because I have no idea how those big planes can get up off the ground. I just try to trust that the crew knows what they're doing and that they've done it before. Mark, maybe if you learned more about the little planes and learned about the basics of flight, it would help you feel better." "Yeah, I'm sorry I've never said anything about it before. Still, those little planes look like so much fun. I've always toyed with the idea of learning to fly, but I'm not sure if I can now. Maybe I'm getting too old. Besides, I'm not sure this is the way to go about getting over my phobia." "Mark, you should check into it," Jennifer encourages. "Just make sure it's safe. I think you'd have fun, and Shannon and I would happily volunteer to be your co-pilot whenever you need one. Remember that time I went parasailing in Mexico? I love that." Shannon chimes in, "Yeah, Dad, maybe I could learn to fly someday, too. Hey, aren't you the one who's always saying we shouldn't run away from our nightmares, but run toward our dreams?" How could she be so wise for a 17-year-old kid? I guess after a while, some of the advice a parent repeats sinks in after all. Well, I'll check into it. I'm not going to do anything stupid. If they're not safe, then forget it. In the weeks that follow, I become a human sponge, a man possessed. Before I know it, I find that every spare minute of the day I look for information on sport flying. I'm clearly distracted by this impulse. I investigate the internet, books, and magazines to get a fix for my new obsession on flying. Passions don't come along often in life, so one shouldn't be too quick to dismiss their potential gifts. With that in mind, I continue my research. For a little perspective, I read up on the world's first ultralight, the 1903 Wright Flyer. It was Orville's flight that was the first time a machine carrying a man and driven by a motor had lifted itself off the ground. The flight lasted 12 seconds, climbed to 10 feet, and covered a distance of about 120 feet. The 1903 Flyer weighed slightly more than modern-day ultralights at 600 pounds, but it really lacked horsepower. The 1903 Flyer only had 12 horsepower compared to the 65 commonly used today. My office staff is very tolerant of my new fixation. Seeing the literature strewn around my office, they realize this new project is more than just a passing interest. They tease me good-naturedly about having to move the stacks of airplane magazines just to find my in-basket. Mark, you have so much going for you. Why would you want to risk everything to mess around with ultralights? Maybe they're right. Maybe this idea is crazy. One thought keeps bugging me, though. That one ultralight pilot, Rich, what did he mean when he said, "I think my life is at greater risk if I don't fly"? And why do I feel like I understand that statement? Unfortunately, ultralights inherited a bad reputation during their infancy. In the beginning, several people hurt or killed themselves. The little planes were assembled in garages and in backyards without supervision. People figured they were easy to fly, so as a result, many crashed. Ultralights look simple enough, but operating them without adequate guidance or training is dangerous. The ultralight industry now stresses the importance of good construction, maintenance, and getting the proper flight and ground instruction. Because safety is a huge concern, I scour the literature about ultralight accidents. I learned from everything I read that the majority of accidents are caused by operator error. Common terms used to describe the mishaps include failure to maintain flying speed, inadequate pre-flight inspection, improper maintenance, contaminated fuel, or fuel starvation. I'm unable to find many accidents in recent years that are blamed on the ultralight itself. By all accounts, these vehicles have evolved into safe machines if utilized properly. Clearly, education and proper instruction are essential. I continue my research intensely over the course of the next few weeks. The more I read, the more it becomes apparent that the pilot controls his own fate. Ultralights don't kill people. People kill themselves by being careless or reckless. My personality is a little bit obsessive-compulsive. I enjoy a challenge and then become obsessed with mastering it. Occasionally, taking time off from work to pursue my new interest, I drive out near the cornfields, hoping to run into Dan and Rich again. I also make a couple of trips out to the local airport, but without luck. There's no way I can break into this sport on my own. Despite all of my preparation, research, and efforts, I would still need help.